Well, the award is called the Ian McTaggart Award for Excellence in Biology, and it's sort of a lifetime cumulative award for people that have been involved in the biological field for a long period of time and hopefully done some good.
So who was Ian McTaggart?
Ian McTaggart Cowan was a professor at the University of British Columbia, and he was in the Department of Zoology for a long, long time. He was the dean of the department, and then he became the dean of graduate studies. But he's always been one of Canada's foremost zoologists, foremost wildlife experts. And he's been on every, I'm sure, provincial, federal wildlife ecology committee that you could name. And he's probably had some of the most strongest influence on wildlife management in the country.
What is your connection to him? Because you have a very personal one.
I do, and it was strange how it worked out, because I'm still in the process of retiring, and I have been trying to for the last 5 years, and to get this award at the end of my career was very personal, and nobody really knew the long attachment that I'd had with Ian. And it started in the mid-1950s when I didn't even know who he was, but I knew that he had a marine biology program on TV on Wednesday afternoons after school, and I'm sure I was the only kid in Cranbrook that used to go home and watch his marine biology program. And I wrote to him to identify what kind of courses I should take to become a biologist. And I did my master's and PhD with him. And I've sat on the Nature Trust board with him. And it's just been a long association over a long period of time. And he's just been the greatest mentor. And he's just been one of those unusual people that always seem to be able to contribute good ideas and good knowledge and good thoughts about how to operate in the field of biology.
When you look back over your career, what do you consider your best accomplishments, the most important things that you've accomplished through your career?
Well, as I said at the award night, it's really tough being a biologist, because in most cases, if you have really strong feelings about biological health and biological integrity, almost everything else that we do in human beings is working against that. So you always find yourself struggling against the kinds of things that are changing biological processes. And I could be very cynical and say I don't think I've changed very much, or I really don't have that many successes. But it's all relative, and I think that, you know, working with some of the land use planning stuff in BC, where I had pieces of land set aside, working with the Nature Trust, where we've purchased a lot of conservation land, and then working with the Network of Centers of Excellence in Alberta at U of A, which I helped to start with Ellie Preppas, are things that made a difference. The real question is not did they make a difference, but did they make enough of a difference? And the answer to did they make enough of a difference is almost always no. And I think as biologists, we always keep struggling to get to that level, but it's pretty frustrating, because there's always so much opposition in terms of human development and human requirements and needs and desires that operate against, you know, ecological integrity. So it's always been a tough job to be a biologist.
Well, when I think back to when I first met you in the late 1980s or early 1990, you had come to help Alberta Pacific with setting up their operations here. And the thing that really stands out for me is I remember you saying, this is our last chance to do forestry right. And that made me stand up and take notice. And when I think back over the 20 years that I've known you, I would say that you have changed the face of forestry in Alberta. And that's quite a lot for someone who's not a forester, but a biologist.
Yeah, that was an interesting statement, because I'm basically a biologist from the southern part of Canada, where these things have been going on for 100 years, and coming to Alberta to work in the boreal forest, we're gradually moving our influence and our footprints from south to north, and we don't have many places to go after the boreal forest. So it really is our last chance, and it's our last chance in the sense of the size of the boreal forest, because it is one of the largest forests on Earth. And it was interesting to be able to participate in a research exercise and a land use planning exercise and forest management exercise in that part of Alberta. The new influences, and they're not really new, they actually have been going on for a long time. Things like global climate change and even mountain pine beetle, you know, has been going on for hundreds of years. It just surfaced again in BC in the last 5 or 6 years, and we all recognize how big an impact it is. And now it's coming across into Alberta, and it could actually go right across Canada. Those are things that are so big and beyond the types of forest management that we've been trying to do, that we're just having a lot of trouble grappling with the magnitude of those kinds of situations in terms of how vegetation is going to change, or whether mountain pine beetle that destroyed billions of dollars worth of trees in BC could now destroy billions of dollars worth of trees across Canada and actually destroy a whole forest zone that is one of the last largest forest zones. I'm actually glad I'm getting out of the business now and retiring, because those problems are actually just mind-boggling, and they don't have any clear solutions at this point in time.
You're here today sitting in on the annual general meeting for the Integrated Landscape Management Team at the University of Alberta. Where do you think we're headed in terms of integrated landscape management, or the evolution into whatever it's going to become in the future?
Well, as we've talked, you know, I have been a biologist, but I learned a long, long time ago in the first year of my career that biology was only one aspect of land management. And I actually became a forest land use manager 6 months after I started in the field. And I've worked in that end for the last 30 years. I've been involved in a large number of land use planning processes in both Alberta and BC. And for the most part, they haven't been very successful. We're still grappling with how to make decisions on the land, trying to consider both ecology and economics. And fortunately or unfortunately, depending on who you are, economics wins most of the time. So land use isn't this so-called balancing process that we all talk about in terms of trying to keep both things going. Land use is really the kind of economic decisions we make and the kinds of impact those economic decisions have had that are now influencing things like mountain pine beetle and global warming. So they're absolutely huge. And I've just been particularly frustrated, and I don't know that we really have a good land use management framework anywhere in this country, and certainly not at a provincial level, because in most cases, people and provinces and political situations get driven by economics. And as long as that's going to dominate the scene, you know, up to 80, 90, 100% in some cases, the ecological components continue to lose. So land use it's really, in my mind, a very hollow term that tries to describe what we think we'd like to do, but never, ever quite accomplishes it.
How do we get beyond that short-term thinking around economics and really pull ourselves into this framework of mind where we can actually take in the big picture and make those long-term plans?
Well, the best example I can think of right now is after having listened to Al Gore talk about The Inconvenient Truth and having read at least part of the book, and then seeing him get a Nobel Peace Prize, and yet at the same time go back and have all his lights on his house and have this huge electricity bill, which is exactly opposite to what he's been preaching. And I think until we actually start to practice what we preach at an individual level, where people like that understand that they can't just go around telling the rest of the world that they're supposed to change, they actually have to change themselves. And I think the most difficult part is for each of us as an individual to make that change. And until that change happens at an individual level and becomes a cumulative effect, we're still going to continue down the same path of the inconvenient truth. And I think Al Gore was a good example of preaching the gospel, but not practicing it. And it's the practice that really counts, not the preaching.
What's next for Darrell Hebert?
Well, I'm actually still hoping to retire. I've been at it for 6 or 7 years now, and I'm not very good at it. So I'm actually hoping to quit work this summer, this fall, and I'm going to spend a lot more time fly fishing for salmon on the coast and a secret lake in northern BC, which is absolutely fantastic rainbow trout fly fishing.
Congratulations on the award, and thank you very much, Darrell.
Thanks a lot, Cheryl. It's been fun doing an interview again after about 12 years.